Coming to you live on tape, this is Coach Culbertson with Leadership Shot, and today we are celebrating being listened to in 35 different countries around the world, including, new to the analytics board, Russia. Russia, you are just lighting up my analytics like crazy. There's actually, in the last couple of days, 50 new listeners over in Russia. And previous to that, approximately 25 new listeners. So, Russia, thank you for joining us. So happy that you are tuning into Leadership Shot. Today, I have an awesome guest for you. He's been a longtime friend of mine from the literary world. He is the overlord, a.k.a. the editor-in-chief of RayGunRevival.com, a website that is dedicated to bringing back space opera. And it is an amazing site. You really want to check it out. My guest is John Cook. John, thank you so much for being with us here on Leadership Shots.
Hey, Coach. Thanks for having me.
You know, John, we have kind of traveled around in some of the same circles over the years. And, you know, the work that you have done in Reagan Revival and essentially kind of reviving, you know, exactly what the website says, reviving an entire genre, really, of writing. You know, in this last week, we lost a major writer in science fiction, Ray Bradbury, and the leadership that he brought so much to so many writers. And then, of course, writers influence other people. And so, you know, John, I'd like for you to talk a little bit about, you know, what's going on with how do writers really lead us, and how does that really trickle down into our social zeitgeist, you know, the spirit of the age. You know, I mean, what's going on with this? How can writers lead us?
Well, that's a great question, and there's a lot more meat there than we can get in 15 minutes. We'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
I had a couple things on my mind. One was that Ray Bradbury had sort of a love-hate relationship with television. There was some question whether Fahrenheit 451, you know, referred to television, you know, being, you know, representative of the nanny state or something where, you know, Big Brother was kind of taking away from our ability to think freely and to read for ourselves. But you see somebody like Joss Whedon, who is inspired by, you know, Ray Bradbury, at least in part, and he's done a really good job of, you know, creating really interesting futures for us, whether it's Firefly from a few years ago or most recently The Avengers.
Yeah.
Which, as of right now, I think is number 4 on the all-time, you know, bestseller list, moving right up the charts.
Oh, deservedly so. That movie was incredible. Holy cow! You know, it was amazing.
And I think that's a triumph of, you know, both, you know, tight outlining. Joss Whedon calls himself the script Nazi, you know, an outline Nazi. He wants to make sure that everything, you know, has the proper beat and everybody, you know, has something to do. And if you take a look at The Avengers, I think that's really a triumph of good writing. But even more interesting to me is something that I read here in April, a story about Neal Stephenson. Neal Stephenson is one of these writers kind of out on the fringes. He sort of charts his own trail. He's very concerned about the future. He says that science fiction authors are not optimistic enough, that if you take a look at today's science fiction, it's fixated on nihilism and dystopian futures. If you take a look at films, you can see it in things like Cormac McCarthy's The Road. You can see it in TV series like The Walking Dead. He said the hopeful visions of the mid-20th century are gone. And you can kind of see that, you know, reflected in, you know, like the fortunes of NASA. And so Neal Stephenson...
Yeah. Now, I was just wondering, you know, when you say mid-20th century, John, have you noticed somewhere along the line, was there some kind of shift in the science fiction landscape that kind of signaled this movement towards, you know, towards a pessimistic future? Oh, everything's going to hell, it seems like, in a handbasket, if you were to look at science fiction nowadays. You know, was there some event where it was just kind of a general slide? I mean, did you notice something somewhere along the line that just, you know, somebody kicked over the bucket?
Well, I think it's been a gradual slide. I mean, if you take a look at the new wave writers of, you know, what, the 60s or the 70s, they were already questioning the more, you know, rah-rah, you know, pulp science fiction that we had before that. And, you know, if you take a look even since then, you've got cyberpunk. You've got a real shift away from that kind of heroic, kind of patriotic, you know, pulp fiction that, that you know, you wear your heart on your sleeve, you know, John Wayne and science fiction kind of characters. You see a lot more of the gritty characters, a lot more shades of gray. And it seems like the, you know, we've taken our eyes off the stars. We've taken our eyes off of the sense of wonder and really plumbed, I think, and perhaps fairly so, a lot of the questions of the day. But in so doing, we've lost our vision of the stars.
Wow, that's heavy, man. Because I think even in like you were saying, the fate of NASA, it seems like, and how many cutbacks we've experienced that, we've lost that outward look to us all. You know, John, is there anybody who's out there who's really looking to help bring that back, though? I mean, you know, we know that the literature of the age, it really leads us, it influences. Is there anybody trying to bring back this sense of wonder to get us to look back out at the stars and say, hey, it might be awesome if we're out there?
Well, I'm sort of biased towards space opera, sort of you got some of the harder science stuff on the one side, and you've got the real devil-may-care adventures on the other side. But science, space opera has kind of always been in the middle, kind of the science fantasy side of things.
Okay.
And a lot of the authors that I like seem to still have that sense of wonder, you know, whether it's Alistair Reynolds, you know, with his, universe-spanning space opera, or you got something a little closer to home. You know, the thing is that, you know, with Star Wars in 1977 seemed to signify a real sea change for positive adventure. You know, you had people who were weary of the Vietnam War. They're distrustful of big government. And all of a sudden you have this story where you kind of back to basics. You get, you know, heroes wear white and the bad guys wear black. And everybody seemed to really take to that breath of fresh air, simple heroism. But then something strange happened. The director who gave us that vision kind of took it away from us again with a prequel trilogy, and I don't think it was by design. You know, I think he was trying to go for something perhaps a little more intricate, but I think it kind of backfired. I think in the process we got a little jaded, and we start dealing with things like, you know, midi-chlorian count, where you explain away the magic, and people kind of think, well, maybe there wasn't anything there to begin with. But Neal Stephenson is trying to do something about this. He's got something called the Hieroglyph Project, which is all about putting a focus back on getting big stuff done. When he's talking with Michael Crow, the president of ASU, Michael Crow was pretty, you know, clear, you know, placing the blame. He said the science fiction authors are the ones who've been slacking off. He says, we already have the engineers, we already have the contractors, we have the people who are ready to do these big things, but we don't have the vision. And that's where science fiction authors can come back and perhaps recapture some of that legacy that's been missing.
Yeah, and I think right now we really need, you know, after the whole economic collapse that we're just now starting to come out of a little bit, we really need that sense of hope. We need that sense of optimism that old pulp fiction sci-fi used to bring to us, it seems like. Now, are you seeing writers actually writing to this as well? I mean, as manuscripts come across your desk for publication there at Raygun, you know, are you seeing authors do this, or are you seeing authors still kind of wanting to go towards the anti-hero, the grit, the prostitute with the heart of gold kind of stories? You know, I mean, what are you seeing right now? What are writers actually doing?
Yeah, I'm seeing it all, really. You still see a lot of the gritty, life is hard, and you're seeing those kinds of stories. But we're also seeing stories where, today's conventions are sort of tossed aside, and we return to kind of a more simple adventure story where you get a, you know, boy meets girl in space with, you know, ray guns. And that's fun too. And the thing is that, you know, with this project that Neal Stephenson is working on, he's trying to encourage writers to do something that's both optimistic but also realistic, something where an engineer who's just starting out now can plausibly see accomplished within his career. He says they've got, you know, one rule: there's no hackers, no hyperspace, and no Holocaust. The idea is that they want the collaborators to avoid pessimistic thinking and magical technologies like hyperspace engines He says they're trying to get away from the hackerly mentality of playing around with existing systems and trying new things. So the idea here isn't that it's just pie-in-the-sky adventure. It's also about, given the resources that we have, what can we do next? What's the next step in plausible scientific achievement? And where can we, you know, plausibly go in the next 50 years? And that's something that, you know, kind of this near future writing is something that you see from even people like William Gibson, who's sort of known for this darker, you know, grittier cyberpunk. He writes a lot in the near future, and I think it's an interesting area to explore.
Yeah, you know, a while back, I was reading someone, I couldn't remember who, maybe it was Kurzweil or somebody else who was interesting, but they were talking about how Star Trek might actually end up being a documentary, which I think was a really interesting statement. We're looking at, right nowadays, we're looking at the tablet computers, and of course, on Star Trek Next Generation, that's what they carried around, right?
Well, yeah, it's sort of turned out that way from a technological point of view. But it's interesting because the human development has not kept up, because in that Star Trek future, there's no more need for money. There's you know, apparently no more, you know, hate crime and that kind of thing. You know, you've got it's a very multicolored future where not only, you know, do people get along, you know, black and white, the genders, everything, all of that is sort of, it's sort of solved in that future, but Star Trek really doesn't tell you how you get there. And that, I think, yeah, is a really interesting thing, because you see, you know, we have the technology, tiny cell phones, and one of my favorite gags from the iRobot film, Alex Proyas, was that cell phones keep getting tinier and tinier until you've got tiny little things with people talking on something the size of a quarter.
So, true that.
Technological development is there, but we're not seeing the sort of the spiritual development of man. And I think that's something that would not reflect as a Star Trek documentary.
Yeah, right on, right on. John, you have definitely enhanced our awareness with this. Thank you so much for being here with us. And friends, by the way, you can look up John at raygunrevival.com, see the great work that he is doing there. John, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, and, you know, Ray Gunn, we like having fun with people. It's a free webzine. It's always been. And as you say, we've been spearing your puny planet since 2006.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, once again, friends, this has been Coach Culbertson and John Cook for Leadership Shot. And here I am once again telling you to be good to each other this week.